Now, for today's Grumble Free podcast, we are talking to Jill Savage. Jill has always been an inspiration to me, and I'm so glad she is sharing with us today. She is a writer and a speaker. She is a mom of 5 kids, and she will talk about how we need to really control our expectations. We often expect too much, and that leads to a lot of grumbles. Now, Jill has been such an inspiration to me. I remember going to a MOPS conference. This is Mothers of Preschoolers conference years ago. I think my oldest son was maybe about 10 and my youngest was 6. So I was still officially a MOPS mom. And Jill stood up there and she encouraged us to enjoy the time with our kids. I remember her holding up this huge football jersey and talking about how her little boy is ready to launch into the world. And that just inspired me. I am so glad that Jill took the time to endorse the Grumble Free Year, and I know you are going to enjoy this interview.
You're listening to Walk It Out with Tricia Goyer, where we discover what it looks like to follow God and be swept away on the journey of a lifetime. Author of over 70 books, mom of 10, yes, 10, homeschooler and speaker, Tricia Goyer will explore what radical obedience to God's word looks like. It's time to hear from God lovers who've dared to say yes. Listen in to heart-to-heart chats and learn how others overcame doubts and fears. Discover how God used ordinary people to impact others one step at a time. If you're ready to get radical, get going, and make a difference in this world, you're at the right place. Here's your host, prolific writer, world traveler, people lover, and mega nap taker, Tricia Goyer.
Well, I am so excited to have my friend Jill Savage here for the Grumble Free series. So welcome, Jill.
Well, thank you.
I love having you. You just start by telling everyone just a little bit about yourself and your family and your ministry.
Well, I'm a wife and a mom. So my husband, Mark, and I have been married 36 years, 26 of them happily. So we're really honest about that. They weren't just, you know, 10 bad years, but we've had some rough ones. And then I have 5 children. They're all young adults now. They range from 34 to 22. And I live, believe it or not, in a place called Normal. I live in Normal, Illinois. And honestly, my ministry is all about helping people, helping couples, helping moms understand what normal looks like in life. And, you know, I think a lot of times we struggle with expectations that are really unrealistic. And so I really have a passion for helping couples who are experiencing discontentment in their marriage, as well as helping moms who are experiencing discontentment in their life to really begin to adjust those expectations and understand what normal looks like.
That is so good because, you know, when we started the Grumble Free Year, I thought, okay, we could have my kids do these activities, memorize scripture, we're all going to be good. But really, it came down to me because I was a major grumbler because things didn't always go as I planned. Like, I planned to get out the door by 8 a.m. and there's kids, you know, dragging. And so, first of all, those expectations, they just set us up for failure. So I just love for you just to talk about that. And I would love for you to mention your No More Perfect books.
Absolutely.
Too.
Well, my No More Perfect books came out of my own journey of learning to adjust my expectations. And so my No More Perfect Moms deals with what we're dealing with when we are trying to manage what I call the perfection infection in our life. And the perfection infection is when we have unrealistic expectations of ourselves and we unfairly compare ourselves to others. And so I think the media really feeds into the perfection infection. I think social media can feed into it. I love social media just like the next person does, but I have to really watch how I'm comparing and is it raising the perfection infection up inside of me? And then No More Perfect Kids followed that. And that looks at, well, what happens when the perfection infection invades our parenting? And we have unrealistic expectations of our kids and we unfairly compare our kids to others. So who would we compare them to? Well, maybe kids in the neighborhood, maybe kids at church, maybe it's their own siblings, or quite frankly, maybe it's the imagined child in your head that never has shown up. And so we really, you know, I think as parents, we don't realize how much we do that. And boy, when I began to kick the perfection infection out of my parenting, I was able to accept my kids for who they were. And it changed our relationship. It changed my relationship with my kids. And the interesting thing was, I didn't get serious about that until three of my kids were young adults, already out on their own. And two were teenagers still at home. And it transformed my relationship with all five of my kids, even the ones that I was no longer actively parenting, but I did have this, I still had to have a relationship with, and it improved that relationship in a huge way. So
can you tell us, tell us how you did that? Because I think people are like, okay, I need my relationship with my kids to change. So just what are some practical ways that you set about to do that?
Right. So one of the things that we talk about are the antidotes to the perfection infection in parenting, and they spell CLAP, C-L-A-P. C is compassion. I began to have a lot more compassion. Before I dealt with a perfection infection in my own life, here's what would happen. I was the buck up mom. I was the buck up in my own life, like buck up, you've got this, you know, there's no reason to get all upset about something. But I was quick to tell others, my children, why they also needed to buck up. And so therefore I was low on compassion. Mm-hmm. And so I really began to learn to give, respond empathetically to my kids. So if something hard went on, you know, my perfection infection response was, well, life's hard sometimes, you know, so what are you going to do now that you didn't get that job? What job are you going to get? Well, my parenting after perfection infection, kicking it out, I would respond with, oh my goodness, I'm so sorry you didn't get that job. You have to be terribly disappointed. And I really tend to their heart. And we may get to, so what are you thinking now? But that's down the road. It's not the first thing I say. So that's the C. The L is love. And if I'm really honest, I was characterized by conditional love. If my kids did what I wanted them to do, my response to them was loving. If they didn't do what I wanted them to do, my response was unloving. And I had to learn that my kids may need consequences, but my anger and my withdrawal of my love was never an appropriate consequence. So that was a big change. So we have compassion, love. A is acceptance. And acceptance is accepting our kids for who they are, the reality of their struggles. Now, acceptance doesn't mean agreeing with. It simply means that we accept the reality of our kids' struggles, the places where they're still trying to figure life out, where they're still on a journey. And quite frankly, in my perfection infection parenting, I wasn't very accepting. I wanted them to look a certain way and be a certain way. And when I began to kick that out, they felt more like they belonged, and they felt more accepted and ultimately more loved. And then the P is perception. And perception is that we are seeing each child as the individual that they are. So quite frankly, in the early years, I parented the herd. You know, I would herd everybody to the store to get their school clothes. I would herd everybody to church on Sunday. I thought I almost saw them as a group instead of seeing them and perceiving the unique individuals that they are, the way that God made them uniquely. And when I began to use perception and tune into that child, which is different than the other child or than his siblings in any way, shape, or form, I began to connect with them. And that's really what No More Perfect Kids is all about. I know that our kids need correcting, but first we have to connect with them before we can correct them. I had that turned around. And when I began to do the connecting work, it completely improved our relationship.
Hey friends, I am interrupting this podcast to tell you something exciting. So the Grumble Free Year is on audiobook. I am so excited. It's so fun listening to it. It makes me chuckle to hear someone else speaking my words. But the fun part is that you get to hear part of it. So don't click off as soon as you hear me wrap up, because at the end of this podcast, you're going to be able to hear the prologue to my book, The Grumble Free Year. Now, the audiobook for this is available on Amazon.com and everywhere else where audiobooks are sold. But make sure you stick around and listen to it. I think you're going to like it. Oh, I love that so much. So compassion, love, acceptance, and perception.
Yes.
And, you know, just even when thinking about the compassion, we've adopted kids from foster care,
yeah,
and they would like fall and barely skin their knee. And they're like wanting me to, you know, tend to them and put Band-Aids on. I'm like, it's not even bleeding. You don't need
right.
a Band-Aid. And it took God, like, they reminded me, like in his spirit reminded me that they never had someone to tend to them,
yes,
to see that if they're okay, to like sit by them. And so I love that that is the first one, because it is our kids, like, it's a big deal to them, like whether it's a boo-boo, whether it's a,
yes,
someone said something to them at school. And we just are like you said, like, oh, you're fine. Like, it's not a big deal, because in life we know it's
right.
not a big deal, but to them it is. And when we are grumbling about them and telling them to hurry and you're going to be fine and you don't need a Band-Aid, I mean, why would they want to spend time with us? Why would they want to connect with us when we're not even helping them or giving them that compassion?
Yes, exactly. And really, it's not about the Band-Aid. Like, the Band-Aid might be the tool that you get to use to show compassion, but it's not whether it's bleeding or not, because their little heart is bleeding. And that's what we're tending to.
Oh, and the other one that you just said, I mean, the other ones are good too, but that perception, mm-hmm, because I feel like I'm the hurting too. I still have 7 kids.
Yes.
So, you know, we're all going here, we're all going there. But I love it when I just can spend one-on-one time, even if it's like right now, I was just helping my daughter make a frozen pizza and we were in the kitchen chatting. And it's like, okay, I just connected with one child and she really appreciates that I just came in, even though she's 12 and could probably figure it out, just helping her make
yes.
a pizza. I mean, all those little things really matter
yes,
to our kids.
Yes, they do. Because really, in parenting, the little things are the big things. And I think as parents,
yeah,
we tend to want to minimize the little things because, like you said, in the big scope of life, they don't seem like they're that big of a deal. But in a child's life, they are a huge deal. And that's really, you know, my husband and I spend a lot of time mentoring marriages. And we'll talk about people's past and we'll talk about their parents. And one of the questions that we will ask is, how did your father make you feel? How did your mother make you feel?
Hmm.
And so when we're showing compassion and love and acceptance and perception, we are really trying to increase the possibility that our kids will say, my mother made me feel seen. My mother made me feel heard. You know, that's really what we want. And when we do that, then we have successfully kicked the perfection infection out of our parenting.
Oh, that is so good. I mean, just me thinking of that question, my stepdad was very uninvolved and I always felt like I had to be really good to try to get his attention. That's something I fight my whole life. Like, I'll do this. I'll take care of
yes.
this. I'll be good. it goes back to that. And I don't want my kids feeling like they have to perform for me or for when, you know, whoever in their lives, their bosses, their, you know, who have friends. I mean, that's so, so good. Oh, I'm appreciating this so much. It's really
good.
Speaking to my heart today. So let's transition a little bit into grumbling, because, you know, when we're grumbling at our kids or when we're allowing them to grumble, we're not accepting each other or having compassion or love. So do you
right.
have any tips
well,
for that?
Well, you know, I'm thinking first, you know, and mediating our own grumbling, you know, we started out talking about expectations. And what I find is I grumble less when my expectations better match reality. So I think that that is huge for reducing grumbling and recognizing that, you know, when I expect, like, for instance, with my kids, I think we should expect responsibility and we should expect obedience and we should expect them to fail at both. And you see, that's the piece right. We forget about. And so we end up, you know, wanting perfection. Same thing in our marriage. If we're married, you know, we expect our spouse, if we ask them to do something, we expect them to do it. Well, should we be able to? Sure. But can we factor the humanness in there? And so when I expect that my spouse will forget to do something I asked him to do, because he's human after all, his brain is in 20 different places and oh my goodness, he forgot it. So then if I recognize, hey, this is part of life and I choose grace over grumbling, what a difference that can make.
Yeah, that is so good. And that's been something I've been working on, you know, adding all these kids in. I can't expect that when I clean my house, it's going to stay clean.
Right.
Or, you know, when we're running to activities, I can't expect that everyone's school books is going to get back in their cubby. And before I'd grumble because everyone left their things out or they didn't get their chores done, when I shouldn't have even expected that because we were running out the door. Like, when did they have time to do that?
Yes.
And so in my mind, I'll say, when I go into the dining room and it's going to be piles of books, I'll just, you know, say, okay, guys, let's pick up our stuff before we start, you know, today's work. Let's straighten up. And it's like a total different attitude. Wow. Than going in there and grumbling because there's the piles everywhere.
Yes.
And the kids respond. They come up and they put, you know, organize their little books and then we're off for the day. It just changes everything when we know, when we think, it's kind of like taking that and thinking ahead.
Yes.
To how are we going to respond, because it's going to happen every single
it
day.
It is. And I think that we can do the same thing with our kids. You know, really, as parents, we are leaders. That's what we are. I think a lot of us don't think of ourselves as leaders, but really parents are leaders and it's our job to lead our kids. And so what you're doing in that moment where you adjust your attitude and then you go in there and you lead well. And sometimes we also need to help. We need to lead them well individually. Maybe they need help thinking through their expectations going into a situation. Maybe they need help, thinking about how to handle it when somebody disappoints them, rather than grumbling. What could they do? Could they forgive? Could they give grace? So even helping our kids to understand the emotional health of what and relational health of what you do when life doesn't work out perfectly. And that is, for us to lead our kids to understand their options, the options they have, rather than grumbling, is a beautiful gift that we can give to them.
That is so good. I love that. And I just love, okay, yeah, I've been working on myself. Now I need to work with them even more to prepare for those things. And I do sometimes, like when we go on a big road trip, I'll say, okay, we're all going to be stuck in the car.
We
need to, you know, speak to each other with kindness and all those things. But I think I love that. Even in daily life, we can just remind them, okay, these things are going to happen. This is how we can respond with compassion, love,
yes.
acceptance, and perception.
Yes.
That is so good. Oh, I love
good.
This. Well, Jill, thank you so much for being here and just sharing this. I just love, I totally feel uplifted today. And I thank you for giving us just things that we can work on in our own
homes. You're very welcome. Thanks for inviting me.
And why don't we just share a little bit about where people can find you online. And I'll have links in my show notes, but I just know for those who don't go check the show notes, I would just love to for you to share it here.
Yeah, the best place to find me is either at nomoreperfect.com or jillsavage.org.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I told you Jill was going to be an inspiration, and I think it's something that we can take into all of our days to help us be grumble-free, to have compassion, to have love, to have acceptance, and to have perception. That is such wisdom. And I'm so thankful for mentors like Jill who can remind us what we need to do to better connect with our kids, to not grumble, to encourage each other. And it's also encouraging to know that Jill rebuilt those relationships with her older kids, even though they were out of the house. And I think that's important to remember, whether it's our kids or other family members, we can today turn things around and improve the relationship. We can show our compassion, love, acceptance, and perception, and really reach out and touch the heart of another person. Instead of grumbling, we can turn to gratitude. I am so thankful you are tuning in to this podcast series. I love that you're here. Now, if you want to know more about the Grumble Free Year, go to thegrumblefreeyear.com. And if you pre-order the book before November 5th, you will get all types of goodies. Now, we have a 60-day gratitude journal that you could print up and use with your family. There's also the coloring sheets that I use with my own kids as we work through being grumble-free, like the scripture verse, do everything without grumbling and complaining. Yeah, that's included in there. And then there are screen locks, because I heard somewhere that we touch our phones over 20,000 times a day. Guilty here, probably. I don't know. I'm not going to count. But I've included some screen locks that you could save, download to your phone, and then be reminded throughout the day to go grumble-free, to turn your heart toward gratitude. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll be here soon, tomorrow, with another Grumble-Free podcast.
One Sunday night, my husband John and I talked to our family about the potential challenge of living a grumble-free year. We were finally sitting down for dinner in a restaurant at 10 p.m. after traveling 2,500 miles over the last 3 days. It was the first time we'd all gathered around the table face-to-face in a week. On the other two travel nights, we'd sat scattered around small tables at fast food restaurants. It was easier pretending our audacious offspring were other people's kids fighting over the fries that had spilled onto the paper-lined tray that way. "Hey, you got 3 extra fries. Not fair. I'm not going to let you borrow my DVD player for the next 200 miles. Now my stomach clenched, despite the non-deep-fried aromas coming from the restaurant kitchen. My knees quivered under the wooden table, an upgrade from brown formica. Parenting was hard enough. Did I honestly want to pinky promise the next 12 months of my life to a fleeting fantasy that my children could communicate without complaint and retort without repine? I softly bit my lip, knowing I had to try. We had to try. Communication in our home had dropped to the level of mumbles and grumbles, moans and whines. We couldn't live this way anymore unless I invested in noise-canceling headphones. The problem was, society frowned upon parents who muted their children. More importantly, even if I couldn't hear the rumbles, it wouldn't mean my children weren't bemoaning every single thing in their lives. I've been talking with my agent about writing a book that involves all of you, my lips pressed into a tight smile. But maybe this isn't the best time to discuss it since it's so late and we've just driven so far. As I calculated, we'd gone the equivalent to the distance between Barcelona, Spain, and Moscow, Russia, taking all the back roads. "Mom, you have to tell us now," pleaded 14-year-old Maddie as she sat next to her twin, Grace, who bounced in her seat. These two were the most active of our bunch of 8 traveling children. They laughed loud, lived big, and made the Tasmanian devil look like an innocent, frolicking lamb in comparison. "Will the book include our names and pictures?" asked 12-year-old Alexis. "Will we become famous?" Fame was very important to Alexis, who would tell every new person she met that her mom had walked the red carpet. Yes, I did walk the red carpet at Grauman's Chinese Theater after I wrote the novelization of the movie Mom's Night Out. Having been moved around quite a bit in foster care since she was 5 years old, Alexis had learned how to make friends quickly. I could see from the twinkle in her eyes that any chance to be known and become popular, she would consider a win. "I don't know about pictures, but I will use your names, or at least pseudonyms," I answered. Grace stopped her bouncing. "What's that?" she called too loudly. Thankfully, there were very few other customers that time of night. "They're false names," John stirred his straw in his soda. "It's just safer that way," I nodded. "That's right. You might not want everyone reading or listening to this book to Google you." "I want everyone Googling me,"
Alexis smiled and tossed her dark hair back over her shoulder, because I'm fabulous. I chuckled. Yes, yes, I know you are. I don't want everyone to Google me. That's creepy. Grace looked to her twin to back her up. When Maddie nodded in agreement, Grace's eyes glanced back and focused on mine. What's my name going to be? I get to help pick it, right? Of course, if we decide we want to do this challenge. I chuckled at her enthusiasm as I shook my head and gave in to the kids' demands to keep talking. We can talk about it. We don't have to start right away. It's just something we have to think about. A chorus of voices rose in unison. What is it? I looked to John. He nodded, urging me on. Well, our idea is called A Grumble-Free Year. A family of 11 takes on the challenge, or something like that. Grace's eyes widened. You're funny. Maddie shook her head. Yeah, right. I think we can do it, piped up 7-year-old Allie. I looked down at her as she sat serenely next to me. She gave me her puppy dog eye look, feigning innocence, as if. I think we can too, added 9-year-old Sissy. Those two were usually quieter, and their eagerness to take on the challenge surprised me. Wait, what are we doing? 6-year-old Buddy asked. The youngest boy, after 6 girls in a row, he was used to conversation swirling around him. Lots of chattery, dramatic conversation, and it usually took him a minute to catch on. Voices rose, with those who believed in the project speaking up and others who thought the idea was crazy adding their thoughts to the mix. I projected my voice over the din. We know it sounds challenging. Dad and I know it'll take a lot of work. And that's why we want to offer an incentive. I turned to John. Do you want to tell them? Okay, like Mom said, we've been talking about it, and this is going to take a lot of intention from all of us and a lot of working together. But if we try really hard, I was thinking we could all go on a cruise at the end of the year to celebrate a year of working to be grumble-free. Excitement built with questions about the cruise. My favorite was from Grace. Can we have our own beds on the ship? When you come from a large family that likes to travel, the question made sense. We usually piled kids into beds in hotel rooms or sometimes on the floor. I laughed. Yes, I'm sure we'll find a way for everyone to have his or her own bed. Wait! Alexis lifted 2 hands in the air, trying to get our attention. Does this mean we're going to have a famous writer with us, following us around 24 hours a day? I lifted 1 eyebrow and narrowed my gaze at her. I am a writer who lives with you and follows you around 24 hours a day. Laughter filled the air. Alexis shrank down into her seat. Oh, yeah, I forgot. What about you, Anna? I turned to our 17-year-old daughter, who hadn't made a peep yet. She was the easygoing one of the bunch, who didn't get her feathers ruffled often. Also, she was one of the ones I would rarely hear complain. I think we have a 50-50 chance of succeeding, she commented. With this group, I think it'll be hard. I looked to 23-year-old Nathan next. He was our youngest biological child, and he had gone from being the youngest to having 7 younger siblings. Like Anna, he was our contemplative soul who rarely complained, but he was our child who'd been most impacted by the adoptions as we went from a quiet house to one filled with disruption. Numerous times every day, when whines and moans followed every request from me, Nathan would look at me with his Eeyore-like gaze as if saying, "Can't we do something about all this complaining and whining, Mom?" I'd try, of course, to get them to stop. No need to complain about that, I'd say, or let's try to say that again without whining. My favorite was, "I don't understand whinese. Why don't you try that again?" But my constant reminders did nothing to bring about change. Nathan crossed his arms, set them on the table, and nodded. I won't say it's impossible, but... But? I asked. He lifted his eyebrows and sighed, as if truly understanding the difficulty of the challenge. Like Anna said, it'll be hard, but it's worth a shot. That's the important thing to remember. This is going to be hard, John responded. It's not as if we're trying to be perfect. Instead, it's something we'll need to work on. But does this mean we can't tell people when we need something? Alexis asked. Will we have to be good all the time? As we waited for our food, John explained a bit more. No one's good all the time. Even Mom and I mess up. A lot. God doesn't expect any of us to be perfect, but complaining is something he takes seriously. Remember how Moses led the Israelites into the desert according to God's command? Well, they had a lot of needs in that desert, and God knew that. But instead of asking God to meet their needs and trusting he would, the Israelites complained. Complaining is wanting our way without treating others or God with respect. Everyone listened, and I was surprised how well they were paying attention, although I shouldn't have been. Each time we'd added children to our home through adoption, we had experienced a lot of challenges. Yet John and I had learned that the kids' wrong behavior mostly came from not being taught what was right. Time and time again, when we taught right behavior and attitudes, the kids rose to the occasion. We had already taught our kids big things like how to talk rather than yell and how to keep our personal spaces neat and clean. Well, we were still working on that. We taught chores and how to support each other within our home. Now it was time to train our kids on the little habits that sometimes were easy to overlook. Things that nibbled away at the peace and joy in our home bit by bit. Things like grumbling. From the conversation around the restaurant table, it sounded like everyone was on board, and I took a deep breath. The weariness of the trip intensified as the responsibility of what the year to come now held rushed over me. Suddenly, the idea became reality, and the project became serious. I knew, because we'd mentioned both the challenge and the cruise, the kids would never let us back down now. Never. I also knew this challenge had to start with John and me. We needed to set up a framework that would teach and guide our kids without discouraging them. Setting basic goals for ourselves would be the first place to start. I sighed as the waitress approached our table with the first tray of food. I took the cloth napkin from the table and spread it across my lap, both worry and excitement causing my stomach to do a small flip. This challenge was going to be harder for me than I thought, but it would also be so worth it. Taking a family of 11, full of personalities and viewpoints and individual struggles, through an entire year without grumbling was a monumental task. But I sensed we were on the verge of something special, and I couldn't wait to see what God had in the works.